And welcome to the October. Okay, welcome to the Board of Education meeting. Statement is hereby made that adequate notice of this meeting was given by posting written notice prominently on the bulletin board in the office of the Board of Education, the district's website, and sent to the four district schools. The mailing and/or hand delivery of said notice to designated newspapers, the Asbury Park Press, Independent, the PLG, PSG, PSA, PTSO, SAB presence, and student representatives to the board, and filing with the clerk of Homedale Township Police Headquarters and Public Library. Meetings of the board are open to the public, and all members of the community should feel free to participate. There will be two opportunities for the public to speak. The first is at the beginning for agenda items only, and the second is at the end of the meeting for other items. Any individual desiring to speak shall give his or her name, address, and the group of any that's represented. The presentation shall be as brief as possible, but no more than 3 minutes per individual. There are certain matters that may be brought before the board that cannot be immediately addressed in public. Such matters may be referred by the president to a board committee and or the superintendent for consideration and or resolution. The board vests in its president or other presiding officer authority to terminate the remarks of any individual she deems it in the best interest of those present to do so. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Flynn.
Here.
Mr. Sokol.
Here.
Mr. Reddy.
Here.
Mrs. Bramante.
Here.
Mr. Wall.
Here.
Mr. Foster.
Here.
Mr. Hammer.
Here.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Here.
Mrs. Zhang.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Can you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
To the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to thank everyone for being here. I'm sorry we were running a little late. We were doing some work on the superintendent search as well as interviewing or meeting. We don't interview. We meet with candidates that are on the agenda tonight. So we're pretty excited about tonight's agenda and the additions that we are going to have to the Homedale School District. But before we go forward, I just would like to have our student reps give their reports so that they have some looming deadlines coming up. And I want to make sure that they have the most time possible to meet those deadlines.
So seniors are currently wrapping up their early action and early decision applications for college. We wish all seniors best of luck in the college admission process. The seniors are also having their annual Thanksgiving pie sale. The order form is provided on the Homedale High School daily announcements. The payment is due November 11th, and the pie pickup will be on Tuesday, November 23rd from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Homedale High School. On Friday, Homedale High School had their homecoming game. It was great to see football, cheer, dance team, and the band at the game. During halftime, there was a special homecoming ceremony. Congratulations to John Mandini and Anastasia Vanderwoody for winning homecoming king and queen. Yes. Students were given the opportunity. So students were given the opportunity to help with the search for a superintendent. On Monday, October 25th, students were invited to the auditorium to give input on questions such as what are the strengths and challenges of the district, as well as what characteristics would students like in a new superintendent. Students were also given the opportunity to provide their input through a Google form. I will now hand it over to Trinity to conclude the student report.
Regarding October updates from the high school, we have had a livening in our club activities. Many groups began meeting this month, and students were also able to participate in bake sales at school. Students should frequently check the daily announcements, which are always updated with the latest club news. Extra help also started in October. I highly encourage students, especially the underclassmen, to take advantage of this great resource. Teachers have announced their particular extra help days, and late buses are available almost every day at 4 p.m., so please don't hesitate to attend during lunch or after school. Additionally, the sophomores and juniors took the PSATs early this month. Scores are expected to be released by the College Board in December. Furthermore, many of my fellow juniors are getting their driver's licenses. For those who would like a parking space at Homedale High School, a previous announcements email from September should contain the parking contracts form. Students can go to the main office with any questions. We also have some announcements for upcoming events in November. HHS students can look forward to the SAB-sponsored Spirit Week and Battle of the Classes leading up to Thanksgiving break, as well as the annual Powder Puff game. Teachers' convention is also next week, so students will be off on the 4th and 5th. And that concludes the student report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you so much. Thank you for coming tonight and have a wonderful Halloween. Be safe, be well, and see you all next week, next month, okay? Night. Dr. Seitz, school bus emergency evacuation drill report seems to be next. No?
It's there someplace.
Okay.
We are conducting our bus drill and evacuation programs. That includes reviewing whether we have the Department of Transportation health card, that the students can exit through the emergency exit, that we have a fire extinguisher in each vehicle, and that we have communications available to the driver, and we do that through two-way radios, and we are continuing those throughout the month of October and into November.
Okay. Do you have any other report for the board, or is that it?
Thank you, superintendent's report.
Yep.
My superintendent's report will be brief this evening. I know we're running a little late, but I do want to let the community know that the schools are running very smoothly. The students are engaged, and while I don't want to steal the thunder from the curriculum instructional committee, I will just say very briefly, because I think it is so important, that our teachers are doing a fantastic job implementing the reading program at Village, and meeting with Dr. Charlie this afternoon. I was very impressed with the job that our teachers are doing with the iReady math program at Indian Hill. I anticipate seeing significant increases in student growth. And I think what impressed Dr. Charney and me the most is that our teachers were able to make the switch from the previous math program to the iReady math program. The transition was very smooth. Dr. Charney and I have experience with that program in other districts, and I can tell you it was not as smooth as it was here in Palmdale. And I attribute that to the tremendous teachers we have, the support they receive, and the support of our students and parents and moving towards the new math program in particular. That concludes my report this evening.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Do you have a HIB report?
No HIBs this evening.
Thank you. We're going to do committee reports. Terrence, you want to go first? I'm going to go through the
list. Sure, Board President. Very briefly, the committee of the whole had met recently. And the committee of the whole structure is when the entire board meets as a group. An executive session, the personnel items, and for the folks that are listening, personnel items are executive session. It's illegal to discuss them in public. They're discussed in an executive session. The various items related to personnel, various retirements, and other personal matters are listed on your agenda for your review. And again, we're continuing to update on HTEA. I believe I've meeting tomorrow afternoon with HTEA. That's one of the bargaining units. And we met recently with HTAA, which is the administrators union, in regard to their contract as well, to move to secure a fair contract for both the taxpayers and the dedicated staff who work here. And again, in the superintendent search, which we may be talking about a little bit later, We're in a month six or seven or so. This began on about, you know, St. Patrick's Day. And but again, that's an executive session item. And now we're engaged in a different process. But that long process is ongoing. I think pretty quick work considering last year we were in a and continue to be in a worldwide pandemic. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Elizabeth, do you have an update? I know you do. I'm going to take this off. The Curriculum Instruction Special Services Committee met on Wednesday, October 20th at 9 a.m. The following agenda items were discussed. Number one, recommendations for approval. The committee discussed items recommended by the interim superintendent for approval, including but not limited to professional development for district staff, district clubs, summer hours for professional development, staff presenters, revised curriculum writers, New Jersey Seal of Biliteracy Program, statement of assurance for the CEP, which is Comprehensive Equity Plan for the 2021-2022 school year, dual enrollment program with Brookdale Community College agreement, Monmouth County Performing Arts Academy program partnership for middle and high school students, and a revised standardized testing schedule for the 2021-2022 school year. Number two, special services. Dr. Charney presented special services recommendations for approval, including but not limited to home hospice instruction, revised community-based instruction and structured learning experience locations for the 2021-2022 school year, allocations of the 2021 IDEA ARP preschool funds, and out-of-district student placements. Number three, vaccination requirements for teachers. The state mandate requiring teachers to be vaccinated against COVID or submit to a weekly COVID test commenced on October 18th. COVID testing will take place before and after school and during teacher prep time. Testing will be paid by a grant. Questions were asked if teachers would have COVID testing during class time and if substitutes would need to be used to fill in for when teachers are being tested. Up to 20% of teachers are not vaccinated. Number four, district clubs. There are 76 clubs at the high school, 19 at SATS, 10 at Indian Hill, and one at Village. Questions were asked as to why groups like pep band, chorus, and similar musical groups were listed as clubs when attendance is a class requirement. Revised testing schedule. State mandated Start Strong testing was pushed forward because of technical and administrative delays. DLM, which is the Dynamic Learning Map benchmark test, was moved to the spring where it normally takes place. Brookdale Dual Enrollment Program. Five students are currently enrolled in the Brookdale Dual Enrollment Program. Dr. Charney explained that students take core courses in the high school in the morning and then take Brookdale courses in the afternoon. Questions were asked as to why so few students take advantage of this opportunity and how information about this program could be more readily available to students and families. Graphic arts credits in the high school. A survey was done asking high school students if they would like graphic arts credits to be counted for a tech credit or arts credit toward their graduation requirements. According to the survey, 53% of the students would prefer the graphics art remain as a tech credit and 47% would like it as an arts credit. Lesson plans. Dr. Charney presented a template for lesson plans that aligns to state standards, which will be implemented the second semester of this academic year. Lesson plans will include a do now, small group work, guided practice, and independent practice. Revisions were made to include accommodations and modifications for 504 plans and IEPs as per state mandate. Teachers can work together and collaborate on writing plans during the PLC, which is one period per day in Village and Indian Hill. Please see a link for the template, which I've included when it goes online. Wellness rooms. Approximately 70 students in the high school and about a dozen students at SATS have visited the wellness rooms. Administrators are keeping a log of the number of students and types of activities that are taking place. Artist in Residence program. Dr. Seitz and Dr. Charney met with representatives of parent groups from from Village PSA, Indian Hill PLG, SATS PSGA, and the high school PTSO to discuss how their monetary donations can make an impactful difference. Dr. Charney floated the idea that these monies be partially used towards an artist in residence program. Artists such as writers, musicians, and painters work in classrooms in coordination with teachers. These programs can last a few weeks, a semester, or a year. Young Audiences Art for Learning provides artists and curriculums. An example is on the link to their website, which I've included when it goes online. Genesis. Dr. Charney presented an example of the Daniel rubric in Genesis. The rubric has an example of the rating in the upper portion. The lower portion is where the reviewer provides evidence and a description of why the teacher should be receiving this score. There are four domains. Practical math. Dr. Charney recommends practical math as a capstone high school course for students with IEPs that are having difficulty fulfilling the math graduate requirements. The class would start in the 2022-2023 school year. A review of practical math classes offered in Metuchen, Chatham, and Livingston was performed. The curriculum will be designed to concentrate on the foundations of math. Questions were asked as to why the district doesn't already offer a similar course. Start Strong. Dr. Charney presented the state-mandated Start Strong test results for Indian Hill and SATs. The outcomes reflect the MAP and Linkit testing that was done by the district in the spring. Between 1/4 and 1/3 of the students exhibit learning loss. The summer enrichment programs were sparsely attended, so many students who had learning loss did not receive remediation. To address learning loss, teachers will create targeted lessons for students. Teacher leaders, which were formerly titled interventionist coaches, will be meeting with teachers during prep period and after school to help form individualized student plans. Teacher leaders will provide example goals, methods, and setup of paperwork. These personalized and targeted interventions will be based on data collected and will start immediately. There are two teacher leaders in Village, and postings for teacher leaders in the other schools are up. Parents will be receiving individualized scores as soon as they are available from the state. Questions were asked if students who attended the summer enrichment program had improved test scores. Dr. Charney will be presenting Start Strong, Access, ELM, and AP test results to the Board of Education in the November meeting. Guidance. The administration will be meeting with guidance counselors to discuss expectations and recommendations. Guidance has weekly department meetings chaired by High School Vice Principal Ms. Thomas. Counselors are expected to meet with students, not just seniors. Meetings are to be logged so trends can be recognized and addressed. The American School Counselor Association recommends that school counselors handle no more than 250 students. The Homedale High School counselors are responsible for approximately 200 students each. Special services complaints. Questions were asked about parental concerns regarding floating ICR teachers in Village and science and social studies classes. These concerns were currently being addressed by the administration. Questions were raised about parental concerns about Wilson reading in elementary, which were addressed and resolved by the administration. The next meeting date is Tuesday, October 9th at 9:15 a.m.
Any questions? Mr. Hammer.
First of all, thank you for addressing the question about the graphic arts credits in the high school. The question I have, though, is I get doing the survey and understanding it, but is there a reason why it can't be both tech and arts credit?
You know, Mike actually raised that with me, and I'll ask Dr. Charney in the next meeting.
Okay, because I think if you allow flexibility it seems like it's kind of 50-50 split, you know, people more arts focused getting tech credit and people who are tech focused getting arts credit would be beneficial for students.
Yeah, I'll ask.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thank you, Elizabeth. Eileen, do you have a report?
Budget and Finance met on October 20th at 7:30. We talked, as usual, about the 2020 referendum, the interior renovations and exterior site renovations at Village and Indian Hill. These are short and sweet. This project is complete. The documents have been reviewed and approved by Spiesel Architects and Greyhawk Construction Managers, and the final payment will be processed this month. Exterior site additions and renovations and interior alterations at SATs and the high school. This project is complete. Again, Spiesel Architects and Greyhawk Construction Managers are working with the contractor to finalize all appropriate documents for the anticipated final payment application. We also talked about the CCTV and the PA. This project is complete. Again, Spiesel and Greyhawk are working with the contractor to finalize those documents as well for the anticipated final payment application. At Indian Hill, the HVAC controls, the scope assessment is complete, new cabling has been installed, and the controllers and sensors are awaiting delivery. So that's all we have on the referendum. It's winding down nicely. The second thing we talked about is the 2021 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or that you'll hear us talk about it as the CAFRA update. The auditors began performing their field work on Monday, the 25th, and the committee will receive an update regarding the status at the November committee meeting. The last thing we talked about was some policies. The committee will provide an overview of five new and revived policies that will be included on tonight's agenda for a first reading. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, November 10th at 7:30.
Any questions?
Seeing none. Mr. President, I'd just like to congratulate the boards in whether it's 2017 and that area that put together Vision 2020. Mm-hmm. And what you're hearing here in just a basic report doesn't begin to speak to the gravity and the value to the educational system in Holmdel Township. I remember being in the audience and hearing about Vision 2020 and how fast could it be done and all these kinds of things. The folks like Pete Reddy and Joe and Vicky and the others that were there at that time could speak to it more, but this is very rare in public sector for a $40 million project to be done on time, under budget, during a worldwide pandemic, to the point where you're able to associate, I think it was it Peter, four additional projects for the children? And in public sector, it's frankly unheard of. So I just want to congratulate the boards that initiated the idea and also the members of the public who participated in the work and the activities and getting all those things done. And perhaps you may talk about it a little bit more in buildings and grounds, but it's quite a feat that the folks with robotics and engineering labs and all the wonderful things that are going on. It's really, really quite a feat. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mike Sockel, do you have an update?
I actually have a committee report.
I know. Oh, you do.
She always reads my mind. It's like being married twice. So earlier this month, we had a meeting of our diversity inclusion committee, and it was an opportunity for the administration to present updates on where we stand on some of the goals that they had laid out last year, and then to offer new goals looking into the upcoming year. It was a very, I would say, a very intensive session. A lot of detail was offered by the administration, and as a district, we are, I would say, well ahead when it comes to diversity and inclusion, not just from fulfilling state guidelines, but for establishing guidelines of ourselves with programs like our intolerance class. We will have a presentation from Jeff Charney. It could be next month or it might be in December, but there will be a presentation for the public to get a better idea of the progress that we've made when it comes to diversity and inclusion.
Thanks, Mike. Any questions? No? Okay. Pete?
I go. Good evening. The Buildings, Grounds, Transportation Safety Committee met October 21st at 5 p.m. Thanks to Eileen, the Building BGS Committee basically went over a lot of the same things from the referendum. As you heard, all the projects were pretty much done. It'd be sort of weird on these notes that after 2+ years of reporting out on the referendum that this will probably be off. This will be probably one more month that we're reporting out on the referendum. So $40 million project done. Second thing, lead testing requirements, annual requirement. The committee received an update regarding the testing requirements. In 2016, new regulations required all school districts to test their drinking water for lead contents, which the district completed accordingly. The regulations stipulated that the testing would be repeated every 6 years, which the district will be completing in the current 2021-2022 school year. Once testing is complete, the results will be posted to the district website accordingly. And however, prospectively, the regulations were revised to require testing every 3 years. So it went from 6 years down to three. So Mike and his group and facility director are taking care of that. The other topic we touched on was policy review. There's a whole number of policies that we have to review. In this one, the committee was providing an overview of the following revised policies. that will be included on tonight's agenda. Policy and Regulation 7425, which is the lead testing of water in schools. 7450, which is the property inventory. 8420, emergency and crisis situations. And then Regulation 8420, fire and fire drills. The next meeting is November 11th at 5 o'clock.
Thank you. Any questions?
Nope.
Okay. Joe, do you have a, you have an update too?
Yeah. The Community Relations Committee met on Friday, October 22nd. We discussed and reviewed some of the press releases that will be coming out for some of our new hires. We emphasize that press releases should be customized to the individual and reviewed prior to release. We also discussed the survey software that I know, Terrence, this is a particular note for you. They actually reviewed three different types of survey software that we could use as a district. One was from Survey Legends, one from Alchemy, one from Qualtrics. And the administration is recommending Qualtrics. The committee asked for pricing for the various different software packages and the differences between them. The software is pretty much similar across the board, across the various different packages for what the board needs. And the Qualtrics was recommended by the staff. We also discussed the 2021-2022 communications plan by the district. Draft plan is targeted to be released on mid-November. And the committee wanted to make sure that the that we focus the SBOs to focus on overall communication coming out of each school versus just a count of releases and numbers being counted in terms of communications going out. Good, clear, consistent, and timely communications with the community, parents, and students must be implemented and measured, and we recommended that Tim White help with development of these overarching objectives. Fall public relations issues, we discussed the press release for the superintendent search. That went out, and we also, Dr. Seitz obviously did not comment on this section because it can't be involved with this in any way. We discussed plastic shields in the community having different opinions on the removal of plastic shields. They need to have good communications related to this issue. And then the internship program, Board of Ed presentation and site survey or survey results for November will be coming out. We discussed the press release and communications for the internship program to highlight it to the students and to the community. We also brought up Veterans Day at Indian Hill at the end. Dr. Seitz is going to check with Alicia Freese on the status and make sure that various different veterans are invited to participate. And that's the end of my report.
Thanks, Joe. Any questions?
I have one. The Veterans Day thing is November 11th. November 11th at 8 a.m. So any veterans in the town that want to come, it's really a great thing that the Indian Hill School has done for, I guess, at least 5+ years. A lot of old Vietnam guys come back and other veterans and then talk to the fifth and sixth grade classes who really enjoy it. So if you're a veteran, reach out to the Indian Hill School principal.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, I've done that for several years with Pete and the others, and the questions that come out of that from the kids are just truly incredible in terms of what they have asked and the knowledge and the questions they have. Besides, you know, did we kill anybody? There's questions like, does the military have different laws and regulations than civilian, which I thought was a very interesting one, so, which is actually true. So,
that's a good question.
Got good, smart kids out there, and hopefully knowledge about veterans will help them.
That is a great event. Thank you guys for your service, fellas.
All right, at this point of the meeting, we will go to questions or comments on the from the public on action items only. Kimberly DiCello, 21 Huntley Road. I just have a question on number 17. The first cost per hour is $3,074 per hour. Is that a typo?
I would think so.
So that was it.
That was, thank you for bringing us to our attention. I'll revise it before the admin. What is the number? That was an add-on. Hello.
Hi, Conchetta Taylor, 6th and 8th Court. I was wondering with the plexiglass, since that did come up just now, what's going on with it? Because I know in the high school, a lot of classes are taking them down. They don't have them up. Personally, they're disgusting. The kids can't see through it. It affects them more than you guys think. It's not serving a purpose whatsoever. If somebody's got COVID in the classroom, the kids are going to get it because, number one, they're not wearing N95 masks. They're wearing paper masks. They're wearing them improperly. It's not justified. You need to remove these plexiglasses from these kids and let them be in a learning environment. We spent $1.4 million on what? For what reason? To have our kids sitting in a classroom where they can't see their teacher? When I went to back to school night, the plexiglass was so dirty that kids were drawing stick figures on the glass like a shower door. Now you explain to me, if they're touching this and they're able to do that, it's full of germs. It's not okay. Get these kids back to a normal school life. It is affecting them emotionally, psychologically, and in every way possible. We need to do better for our children. And it's up to you, the board members, to be our voice and to do what we have to do for our children. Okay, we come to these meetings, we try to voice our opinion, but ultimately it's on the board, you know, and we look at you guys for help. Be our voice since we can't. Please, for the sake of our children, get them back to normal, please.
Thank you. Any other questions on agenda items only? The items we're going to vote on. Seeing none. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Go ahead. I don't know who it is. Jillian Strong. Jillian Strong, can you say your name and address, please? Okay. All right. At this point in the meeting, we are going to take a motion for items number 1 through 20, 22 to 43.
Move.
Second.
Discussion? See you next.
Yes.
Cover.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. So which one are we talking to?
Item number 1 to 20 and 22 to 43. The only item I pulled is the item related to your retirement.
Oh, okay. So regarding item 39, approval of a contract with educational leadership search firm.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to see to interview more search firms before I vote.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Seeing none, cover roll call, please. Yes.
Mr. Sokol.
Yes.
Mr. Reddick.
Yes.
Mrs. Bramante.
Yes.
Mr. Wall.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Mr. Hammer. Yes. Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes.
Mrs. Zhang.
Item 39, abstain. All others, yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Item number, I'll read it, guys. I'll take, let's see. Who would like to read item number 21?
I'm fine with that.
There you go, Mike Sokol, number 21.
Is it Sturt?
I will agree it's Sturt.
Give it a shot. I hope it's Sturt. So acceptance of retirement custodian at the Homedale High School, whereas Ms. Gail Sturt has served the Homedale Township Public Schools with distinction since November 15, 1996. And whereas Ms. Gail Sturt has faithfully executed her duties with skill and competency. And whereas Ms. Gail Sturt has earned the respect of her colleagues and community residents, and whereas Ms. Gail Sturt has submitted a letter announcing her retirement from the Homedale Township School District effective January 1st, 2022, now therefore be it resolved that the Homedale Township Board of Education accepts Mrs. Sturt's retirement with deep gratitude for Mrs. Sturt's dedication, loyalty, and outstanding services performed, and further extend to Ms. Gail Sturt its best wishes for a happy and healthy retirement.
Thank you. Have a motion.
Move.
Second.
Discussion? See you then. See you then. Have a roll call, please.
Yes, congratulations and best wishes.
Mr. Sokol?
Yes.
Mr. Reddy?
Congratulations. Thank you. Yes.
Mrs. Bramante?
Yes, and thank you for all your years of service.
Mr. Wall?
Yes, congratulations.
Mr. Foster?
Yes, congratulations.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes, good luck.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes, and thank you for your years of service.
Mrs. Annie?
Yeah, thank you very much for your services and congratulations for your retirement.
Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that the board approved a new director of special services, as well as a new, I always call it athletic director, but it's a supervisor of athletics, right? I got it all in? Yes. Director of supervisor of athletics and physical education.
Health and physical education.
So I think they already left. We had the pleasure of meeting them beforehand, and I think they're going to be great additions to the Holmdel School District. So I would like to welcome Mr. Longo, Jason Longo, who's going to be the supervisor of athletics, physical education, and health, as well as Ms. Ananda Lamoglia. Yes, who's the director of special services. So they will be starting, I think, in January 1st, 2022, effectively. So congratulations. We have cupcakes, but they left. So, old business?
I have one quick thing. I've had parents, kindergarten parents, ask what was the status about the aides in the classroom, and I thought that they would like.
Yeah. And like you said, due to class size, rather than split a class and have one person in a room of, I think it was 20, we elected with the board support to put a full-time aide in each kindergarten class. So the ratio of teacher, a responsible adult, to students drops to about 1 to 11, 1 to 12. We are in the process of filling those. We have a responsible adult in each of those classes. We are now looking to fill them with permanent positions so the person will be there for the entire school year. So we're making good progress there. I do want to emphasize that aides in a kindergarten classroom has been the standard for many, many years. And I think it'll be a huge asset to Holmdel to have that this year. And certainly we need to consider that for the 22-23 budget, which we'll be developing shortly.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. Can we get clarification on the travel restrictions? If somebody tested positive for COVID in the past 90 days, are they able to return to school without quarantine?
The quarantine guidelines are subject to change and too complex for me to give you an answer off the top of my head. But we do have the most recent quarantine guidelines on the website. And I would advise someone, if they are not clear after looking at the website, to contact the Monmouth County Department of Health, and they will give you the most up-to-date guidelines for quarantining. But it is an ever-changing position.
Okay. I mean, somebody had called in and received this information from one of the nurses, so that's why I was kind of questioning it.
Yeah, I just too much to try to remember.
Any other questions? New business. I'm going to start with Monica. So I would like to introduce Dr. Monica Brown. She is from HYA, and she is the person that is conducting the superintendent search for us. She's here to provide a report to the board, and will continue to do so as the search continues. Is that correct? So if you could provide a report to the board as to where we stand, the microphone, if you can, that would be awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure working with you all. Over the past 2 weeks, my team and I have had the opportunity to meet with, in focus groups or interviews, 160 stakeholders. And on our survey, which is a virtual focus group. So it's the same questions that we ask in the focus groups, 776 respondents for a total of 936 people who are giving us information about what they'd like to see in a new superintendent, the desired characteristics, as well as the strengths and the challenges of the district. And as I explain in each of the focus groups, it's important for us to know these things so that as we are screening candidates to propose that you interview, it is so important that we understand the community and what are the collective desires of the community. So I want to thank the board members, all of you, for the time that you spent with me in the interviews, and to all the stakeholders in Homedale who made it a point to provide that information. The next step in the process is we will begin recruiting and managing the applications. The decision that you make for the next superintendent, the permanent superintendent, it is such an important decision. And so what we will do is take those desired characteristics and challenges and make sure to screen the candidates so that they are aligned with both. We will present to you in November, the end of November, all of the candidates that most closely align, and of course, allow you to see all of the candidates who, the applications for all the candidates who apply, and then give you a recommendation based on our experience who best aligns with your desired characteristics, and then help you through the interview process, facilitate those interviews, and be with you to coordinate and facilitate the discussion afterward. So I look forward to working with you all for the next few months. I know that this has been a long process. Dr. Seitz has been here, and as you know, an interim can only serve for 2 years. So starting this process is very important, because when you do hire someone, they typically have a 60 to 90 day contractual clause where they can't come for that number of days. So if you back up from the last day Dr. Seitz can possibly be here, it might seem like it's a long time away, but it's really not. So I appreciate you working with me to move this process along so that you are not in the position where you have to hire another interim or an acting or name an acting, which I don't think would be in the best interest of the district. So I will try to help you as much as I can as we move along. Like I said, it's a pleasure getting to know all of you, and I look forward to our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No.
No, I just want to say thank you for giving the board the update when we're looking at other vendors, including, gosh, back in July, the New Jersey school boards and the other folks. This process has been going on for many, many months, and that you've engaged nearly 1,000 of the community have positively engaged in the process reinforces the reason your firm is here during this process. So thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Anything else? Everyone's closer now. It's quicker now.
Okay. I'll echo what Terrence was saying. I mean, within 2 weeks to get 936 people, whether it's virtually or physically, to provide feedback is outstanding. I mean, the amount of raw material is great, and it seems like a lot of the feedback was very similar, which is good. So I think a lot of people are in the same mindset, you know, want to over communicate transparency and a lot of those things. So I think it's a good start, and look forward to the next step of the recruiting process.
Thank you to all the board members. I know you took a lot of time out of your day, to, as you always do, to meet with Monica. So I appreciate that. And all the parents who participated, our students who participated, we love hearing from them. Our administrators, our teachers, our staff members, our principals, I appreciate. I know everyone's so busy right now, so I appreciate all the time everyone took.
I think it's also telling about the quality of this district that we're already getting candidates without even officially posting the job. We're going to do very, very well in this search. We're going to find a top quality candidate that is going to align with the needs of this district. And I myself am very excited to be working with Monica and her team.
Thank you. Any other new business?
Board President, just two quick items. One, I just want to thank the board for considering moving forward with Qualtrics. That's a wonderful software program for a survey. And just one brief item, not for tonight, but I'm hearing about the veterans and thank you for your service. We have so many men and women who help fight to keep our country free, to enable us to have meetings like this. I just wanted to put on the board's consideration, perhaps by the curriculum committee or other leadership committee, the possibility of having an ROTC program in Holmdel. Colstack has a top flight one that's highly regarded. And I just want to put that out there. There may be folks, men and women from our military that may be interested in assisting with that program. There may be some interest in a ROTC program here in the school system. So I wanted to mention that as a concept. Thank you.
Looks like you're okay. Mike Sacco. Okay, just checking. You have no more questions, right, Mike? Comments? Mm-hmm. All right, just checking. Questions? Okay. Questions or comments from the public? Do you come to the microphone? State your name and address, please.
Good evening. My name is Mindy Kim Liu. My address, I live in Nine Seminole Drive, Holmdel, New Jersey. I am here today because parents became aware that the plexiglass are going to be removed. I was told that it's in consideration. But today, a parent has confirmed some of my neighbor's kids saying that the plexiglass has already been removed in middle school. And apparently in high school as well. Obviously, I was very concerned. I'm here to remind that the board, the real fact that we are still in the middle of a pandemic. It's not a hoax. It's a scientific fact that we all lived through in the last 2 years. Over 700,000 Americans have died to date and nearly 5 million around the world. The real number is probably much higher. I ask you, the board, to listen to the scientists and the CDC, to lead our kids into maximum safety while they're in your custody. Want to reiterate what we all know or should know. Now, Delta is a highly infectious disease. It's the original, it's a strain from the original COVID-19, and that children are especially susceptible to it because there's so many close bodies in a small quarter. There are over 3,000 students in the district, 3,003 students in the four schools. Asking parents to send their kids to these schools is tantamount to sending them to a concert every single day. And as such, we entrust our kids to your safety, okay? We'd rather that they're alive than to get an education, because education is an option, it's a privilege, and it can be done remotely. As we all know, children under 11 do not even have a vaccine yet, right? And older children whose vaccines are available, we know that many of them have not gotten it. So therefore, the school must do everything possible to provide maximum,
ma'am, yeah. You address me, the yes. Chair. I will let everyone an opportunity to speak. I always do. I don't hold anyone to a 3-minute time limit. I really don't restrict anyone from coming here and speaking at all. The only thing I ask of everyone is to respect everyone's voice and opinion. And I would ask that the speakers, they speak to me as the chair and I will direct them accordingly. Okay? And then everything will go according to plan. Thank you. You may continue.
Thank you, Board President. Since I was saying children below 11 do not have vaccines yet, older kids are not getting them. They're getting them in minimal numbers. From my understanding, some parents' objections to the plexiglass is that it obstructs their kids' view when they're sitting in the back. And there are layers in front of them that prevents them from seeing the board. If that is the case, then I ask the teachers to rearrange the chairs all along the walls so that there's no plexiglass in front of them, or reduce the rows so that they don't see so many plexiglasses. I've heard people say, oh, the plexiglass causes headaches, it's psychological, emotional distress. There's no evidence for that. If your individual, it's possible that your individual child will experience it, in which case we ask that those individual parents address the grievances with the school board, with the principal, and address it head on. No problems. But to remove the plexiglass and remove these protections in place in the middle of a pandemic, for the few parents, some of the parents whose children are being obstructed from learning, does not make sense. The plexiglass issue, people have said, articles have come out and said the plexiglass does not work against COVID. It's true that plexiglass does not stop COVID when it's aerosolized, when it's invisible particles floating in air, but the plexiglass does stop large droplets of water. Large droplets of Delta hitting another child. This can happen when we talk, when we laugh, when we sneeze, when we cough, etc., which they do throughout the day. These plexiglass, sometimes when they eat lunch, especially for younger children, they unmask, they pull down their mask to eat, snack, and drink. When that happens and they pull down their mask and there's no plexiglass, there is nothing to protect them from getting exposed to Delta. After me, there'll be a physician who specializes in infectious diseases, and he'll tell you about the importance of the duration of the exposure. Just because somebody has Delta does not mean that you will automatically get it. But it's a duration that's important, how long you've been exposed to the person who has COVID. So therefore, the plexiglass, which we know is three-faced, three boards, one in the front and one and two on the side, is important. It's one tool to stop the COVID spread. The mask does it most heavy lifting, but the plexiglass is a layered protection, the strategy, and together it helps to decrease, not eliminate, decrease the spread of COVID, which we've seen happen, closures of schools all over New Jersey this past semester. And that's a fact. I'm also here because Mr. Terrence Wall's position of what I've seen him state on the Facebook post, favoring the plexiglass removal and making face optional. He has personally sent me here to rearrange my life, bring my five-year-old kid to this room tonight to address the board. I feel that, and I'm going to ask you, Mr. Wall, to please reconsider your positions that is going against the CDC, that's against going against the leading scientist recommendation.
So I did say before,
yes,
you direct your comments to me, the chair, and not anyone else. And that includes these board members. Thank you so much.
Sure. So let's just clarify that we need to have these plexiglass because they do provide protection. We have spent millions of dollars on them. And for those parents who said
I just want to make it clear. I don't think we spent $1 million on plexiglass.
Not on the plexiglass itself.
Just want to make sure the record's clear.
Yes. From what I read, it was $1.3 or $1.6 million.
We didn't buy plexiglass for $1.3 million.
I agree.
We did a lot more than buy plexiglass.
Yeah, Ms. Flynn, I know that you installed the UV lights to sanitize the classrooms. You install the plexiglass, all the sanitizing equipment, et cetera. And combined, it's like $1.6 million. Am I right, Ms. Flynn?
No.
Okay, what is the estimate according to
We have a conversation, but I just want to make it clear. We did not spend $1 million on plexiglass. We spent $1.3 million on HVAC systems to circulate this air in a way so that basically the kids are sitting in an outdoor setting. We have, we did the UV lights. We have temperature scanners throughout the entire school district. We have cleaning devices throughout the school district and chemicals. It's not chemicals. It's the, what do you call that? Antimicrobial touch systems everywhere through this district, as well as on surfaces. What we've done here is extraordinary, but the plexiglass was not anywhere near $1 million. I don't have that information here presently.
I agree.
And I'm happy to listen to you
you could continue. We have the emails. It's not a final decision. We don't really make a decision in terms of whether or not there's a plexiglass on the classrooms. That's not our decision.
Who makes the ultimate decision then?
The superintendent of schools.
Mr. Satz.
Dr. Seitz.
I was told by his office to contact the Board of Education and that the board makes the ultimate decision. So who makes the ultimate decision? How much sway does a board have on Dr. Seitz?
We're not in charge of the day-to-day operations of the school district by law. We do have meetings where we're getting reports, just like the staff do that. We do here today. We do that to parents. Mm-hmm. But we're a Board of Education, just form of government. We don't make those day-to-day decisions.
Okay.
We make decisions related to the hiring of a superintendent, the evaluation of the superintendent, the establishment of a budget, and board policy. There you go. Which is really is established by state law.
Okay. So as I was saying, so Dr. Seitz, when I contacted your office, I was told to attend tonight's meeting and that the ultimate to speak to the board and to himself. So I'm a little confused why I'm here.
You're always welcome to come here.
Dr. Seitz is the ultimate decision maker. Can you explain that, Dr. Seitz?
When you're finished, Dr. Seitz will be happy to respond to that.
Okay, great. One other thing, I did email you, President Flynn, and CC'd Mike Sokol twice. I follow up twice regarding what is the format of this meeting. I have not heard from either of you, and I followed up twice. So it's really hard to get any communication about that.
I'm going to check.
Sure. So let me go on with my statement.
Because just so we're clear.
Can I go on?
No, I'm the chair of the committee of this meeting. And just so we're all clear, when I do get emails like this one in particular, without me looking, I do usually refer it right to the superintendent because I cannot respond on his behalf as to how to
it was
a day-to-day operations. And I would normally refer it to the superintendent for a response. So I'm going to check. But go ahead, Doc. Go ahead, ma'am.
When did you send it?
I sent it this week, and then I followed up with you and Ms. Flynn. I have not heard any response. I have also, so I'll leave it at that.
I'm assuming, this is what I'm going to assume without even looking. I sent it to Dr. Seitz for a response.
Okay, so I would like to also ask Dr. Seitz for the... It was more recent regarding the format of the meeting tonight. But let me not go astray and let me refocus on my presentation.
I remember the email. Excuse me, ma'am. I did get your email and I did refer it to the superintendent and I think I responded, if it wasn't to yours, but to someone else's. And Dr. Seitz did respond because there was this reference in your email that there was a meeting set up to discuss plexiglasses, which I was not aware of. And therefore, Dr. Seitz responded to you that there was no such meeting. And corrected some information in there. So I'm happy for you to continue, but I just wanted to clarify that because it's consistent with my practice. I don't really comment on the day-to-day operational items that I'm happy to listen to parents when they bring it to my attention, but then I refer it to Dr. Seitz in accordance with the school ethics code, which requires me to do so.
Okay, may I continue?
Go ahead.
Okay. And I'd like to address the superintendent then, because it was clarified to me that you're the one. Okay, President Flynn and the board. I was surprised and disappointed that the superintendent was considering removing the plexiglass without any notice to the parents. That they were actually considering removing it based on some parents' loud voices, listening to one side, determining action unilaterally is unacceptable. This is a break in the trust that we place on you. And quite frankly, it's an outrage. We believe that the parents who are against the plexiglass are the same parents who want to make masks optional for the kids since the beginning of this term school year, which is totally reckless. If the board is doing the bidding of some parents without first informing all the parents, it makes other parents think that you will try to make masks optional as soon as possible or as soon as a governor's mandate is lifted. So just like some parents here want the plexiglass removed and parents like myself want to keep it, it's not fair or reasonable or rational. It doesn't make any sense to just listen to the few parents here without consulting all of the parents who pay tax money and enroll their kids in the Homedale High School, in the Homedale District. Case in point, the superintendent took a survey of masks recently, and the results were solid. 57% of parents were in favor of following the governor's health mandate by making mask wearing mandatory, while near 37% parents opposed. So the parents of Homedale have spoken loud and clearly. We want the board, we want the superintendent to follow the CDC mandate and the science recommendation to protect our kids while in school. So why are you consulting, only heeding to the loud vocal minority of parents who support plexiglass, I ask? Could you promise me, Dr. Sates, that you will not remove the plexiglass, masks, or undo or reverse the health safeguards in place currently in our schools before informing all of the parents? Okay, you can, if you choose to answer that later, I'm fine with that, I'll accept that. And I also like to ask you that at the PSA meeting at the Village, the Parent Student Association meeting that was recently held, three parents pulled down their masks inside the Village school building at the meeting. None of the principals spoke out and said, wear the masks. This is in direct violation of the New Jersey laws to do so. Could you make sure to remind your principals to follow the law and reinforce the mask wearing inside school premises, please? Lastly, I would like to ask the district to not entertain this anti-science movement that goes against reputable expert opinions and pretend that the two sides are equally credible. The board and the school should be spending all the time and energy on the important work before them to bring quality of education, to safeguard our kids, and not be blindsided or be distracted by these divisions and these disputes about what is fact and what is that the pandemic is real or not, and whether this Delta is dangerous or not. I beseech you to please focus on the important work before you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone online, Steve? If he wants. Thank you, though. Anyone online?
Hi, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, this is Chandana Rao at 57 Oaks Drive. I wanted to sort of touch upon what the prior speaker mentioned and just in general about the superintendent search and whatnot. I think it goes to a level of having us feel that we are not plugged into what's happening with the sort of mission or sort of vision of what the board is intending for our students. There's a bit of a lack of transparency in communication, and that is a bit frustrating for many of us. We found out about parent focus groups that HYA was meeting, and most of us were unaware of it. I think that when we did become aware of it, it was because of, texts that went around. And I think that is a very frustrating piece that, many of us don't like to, find ourselves in. We don't want to be left out in the dark as to what's happening that's going to impact our kids. We would like more transparency from the board and the administration so we know what's going on and we can, voice our concerns as necessary. Just as an example, the survey that was sent around about whether or not, how parents felt about the masks, I thought was an appropriate step. And I hope that the board can do more of that so that parents feel like they are involved.
Thank you. Yeah, I think one of the things that the board has been focused on is to try to create more of that dialogue. And with the approval, I'm anticipating at our next board meeting, we're going to move forward with Qualtrics. That's what I heard tonight. So we are getting a survey mechanism in place because that's one of the areas in which a lot of us
would like to utilize the survey process to get more of that feedback. I'm sorry if you didn't receive the survey that HYA sent out. We got a tremendous response from that, which really did coincide tremendously with the feedback provided by our focus groups. So the survey HYA did send out really was tremendously helpful to the board, to HYA, to building the leadership profile that we are that will be circulated in the next few days to obtain applications. So we're pretty excited about that.
If I may interrupt, it's not that I received the survey and I completed the survey. I think what was interesting, and I reached out to you about that, is that there were a number of parents who were part of additional focus groups that HYA met with.
And I will tell you right now, those groups were chosen based on other type of parent group interactions that these people have had, as well as people who did individually reach out to me through my board email saying, I got the survey and I'd like to participate. Those people were contacted, and if that wasn't in time for the search committee, I did share their contact information with Monica and Dr. Brown. She reached out to everyone that I gave her information about. So she did have individual conversations with a number of our parents, which I appreciated her taking the time. And there's nothing that still doesn't prevent people from sending me an email about their thoughts. I will share with Monica. She could always reach out. But it's imperative that we get the leadership profile together. And I think, like I said, out of over 900 people that have been contacted in connection with this search, we pretty much have a pretty strong, consistent leadership profile that has been developed. But like I said, please reach out. I could put you in touch with Monica. I only received maybe two other people who haven't been contacted by Monica in recent days. So I could, you know, since she's contacted other people, and that would be about it. But I appreciate your interest. Monica, as you noticed on the issue of transparency, she's here tonight. She did give a full report to the board in executive session and here as well in public. We intend to proceed accordingly going forward and continue to provide updates to the public as we move along to this process. However, some people might feel frustrated by the fact that a lot of this stuff does happen in executive session, and that's where it appropriately shall happen. There's a lot of information that can not be shared with the public during this process. And I'd ask for the public to be patient as we go through this process, because as I said earlier, this is the one thing that boards are given the authority to do in addition to two other limited things. And it doesn't include the day-to-day operations of the district. So, but I appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much.
Kimberly DiCello, 21 Huntley Road. I have 2 points. So the first, I just wanted to congratulate our new hires because I don't know how to say their last names. I'll say Jason and Amanda. But I'd like to publicly request, and hopefully one of you could follow up to Amanda, that there be a CPAG meeting. Last March, I tried to get a CPAG meeting. There hasn't been one. It's required by law, a minimum of once a year. There hasn't been one since the 19/20 school year. Tried to get one last year. I emailed with Dr. Seitz about that and didn't happen last year. We're now, you know, I would like to make sure that that happens. So that's my first thing. And then the second thing is, so as you just were speaking about as far as the survey that went out, which I did participate in, it stated that the process was to engage stakeholders through the interviews, surveys, and focus groups, but it didn't say that if you wanted to be a part of those focus groups, to email.
Right.
And so I think that that was a shortcoming, because I understand that you did choose parent leaders of basically there are parent groups to be in those focus groups, but that's not a good cross section, in my opinion, because you really have to be available during the day. And I'm a working mom, not available.
I think there were other parents, just so you know, it wasn't just a parent group.
people. Okay, other so people were contacted and not everyone participated, but just go ahead.
Okay. I would have liked maybe something like if you'd like to participate, mm-hmm. because I think you could have gotten more participation for those focus groups rather than the survey, which is, you know, when you're putting something on just a scale of 1 through 5 with a little comment section, it's just not the same. And I would just like to say that I have a chain of messages with you from April 29th, where you discussed it was just a quick comment saying that you would probably start the superintendent search for summer or fall. Mm-hmm. So that was April 29th. Mm-hmm. Not in March of last year when it's been said 7 months, 8 months, it's been a long process. So,
well, I think just so you know, I was responding to your email. I guess you sent me something in April, I'll assume, without looking. I was getting input from some of the people on the board in March to start it. It was part of the discussion. Problem is, as I'm sure you're aware, we were in the middle of, you know, the ever-changing rules and dynamics of the pandemic, 100%. Which made it really difficult. And one of the things that you weigh as a board member here, especially during the pandemic, doing the search, I mean, we probably would have started, if there was no pandemic, we probably would have started that search July 1st, that summer.
100%.
So that was a lot of the trepidation about starting, because we were concerned about when's the right time. The summer, it determined.
No, and I believe that, I mean, now with Dr. Seitz coming to the end of his 2-year contract, that hopefully mm-hmm. we can have somebody approved in 2022 to be able to start for July 1, and that should be the goal. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, please. Oh. Who wants to go first?
Hi. Sorry, I'm short. I'm going to drop this down a little if I can. All right. Hi, I'm Janelle Michello. I live at 2 Apple Grove Drive in Homedale. I've lived in Homedale for 34 years. I grew up here. I've lived here. I've been in these schools. These are my old stomping grounds. So hi, thank you for having me. 700,000 is a lot of people. And when it comes to death, I definitely have to say one person is too many. I don't in any way undermine life. I'm a very pro everybody and every opinion person, fair as the day is long. But I have to say, I think people throw 700,000 around because it's such a large number. But when you look at math and percentages, the percentages will tell you that the mortality rate is less than 2%. So that's a small number comparatively. Okay, so let me start. Hello, board members, Dr. Seitz. My name is Janelle Michella. So not only have I lived here, but I have 2 children now who attend Homedale schools. Currently, I'm representing myself and a very large number of Homedale residents and parents. There are several matters in which we as parents have concerns and would like to join forces and work in unison with the Board of Ed on. Please let me be extremely clear. Our goal is to work with you and the staff whom we respect and care for, whom we entrust our children to daily. With that, please note the following items as areas of grave concern for the parents from the parents of your town, the stakeholders and taxpayers that I'm speaking on behalf of. 1, the mask mandates. It's controversial, and most of us aren't anti-mask. We're anti-mandate. Everyone should have an opinion and an option. But with that, let me continue. No one likes that the governor has pushed this mask mandate. We all know the school's hands are tied, so to say. However, we would like to find common ground here about leniency and working with the schools to push back against this mandate. We don't need to get into the science of it all, but there is science actually out there about it. And I brought some. We don't need to get into the science of it all, but the truth is we are masking our kids with masks that virus particles can easily pass through. So we are absolutely stopping a level of moisture and sputum from exiting the nose-mouth region of our children's faces. The virus particles are not exclusively bound to those particles, which are caught
and therefore the masks are ineffective. Our immune systems need practice. The overextinction of germs is weakening our children. The best practice of frequent hand washing and area cleaning is a much better habit to teach our children than this paranoid state we have them living in. We're asking that you support our efforts in pushing back against the governor, whether through duly signed letters to him and the NJEA regarding the respect of parental rights, as we respect the school's position and begrudgingly follow along in this ridiculous mandate. Vaccinations. I'm going there. I'm sickened that our teachers, administrators, and support staff must choose between their medical freedom and their personal choice to get vaccinated or not, or deal with weekly testing, or lose their job, or choose to leave it. That sickens me. From heroes to unemployed. For a slew of medical reasons, some people may not want this vaccination. Whose business is it? It's theirs. No one else's. We, the parents of the Homedale school children, do not want our teachers to be forced into vaccination to keep their jobs. We stand with our teachers in the fight for their medical freedom. This is tyranny, and we do not support the government telling them or anyone what to do. Medically, if there were a 5-year study on the safety of these vaccinations and treatment for any complications that may arise, this would be a different conversation. I think everyone logically and reasonably feels that way. These conversations would be different had we had more study. But we are still in year one, and the side effects are many and the severities vary, much like the virus itself. Regardless, again, the virus has a less than 2% mortality rate, and that statistic alone should negate the need for a vaccination at minimum and sink the ship on the legality of mandating one. The future of children and student vaccination mandates is my next area. We know Governor Murphy has all intentions, should he be reelected, God help us, to force a vaccination mandate on our children. Be prepared for the major exodus from the schools if this happens. We are hiring teachers who left due to the vaccination mandates, lawyers, and a few other select professionals to help guide us through this process as we prepare for the vaccination mandates to move forward and target our children. We need the district to take a hard line in unison with the families of this amazing town and tell the governor no. No, we will never force families to vaccinate their children and deny them a free and fair education. We need to get ahead of this mandate before it begins. This will make our battle much easier and our unity that much stronger. Again, I am not anti-vax. I am pro-choice. Everyone should have the final say in their own personal medical, and no one should ever tell a parent what they should or shouldn't do with their child's health. That is a strictly personal, family, private matter. The only person that should be guiding them is their pediatrician. Plexiglass. This is not part of the mask mandate. It does absolutely nothing to protect our children or stop the spread of the virus. Anything that the plexiglass would be doing, which was spoken about already, would be true if we weren't already forced to wear masks. We can continue to maneuver our children around a classroom and make school more like a prison and a more miserable situation for them instead of making lifelong lovers of learning. But I personally would love for my children to love being educated. I loved being educated. I continue my education. I have a master's degree in education. I'm school counselor certified in the state of New Jersey, and I continue my education. I love growing and being smart. Plexiglass is distorted and can cause eye strain, leading to headaches and blurred vision, extended use of the plexiglass and the adverse effects on health and vision of our children. We want the plexiglass gone. This can be an option for students who want it, for families who feel more comfortable with it. Let the kids and parents make this choice. There is zero medical or scientific evidence that the plexiglass, such as the dividers used in our district, is in any way helping our children to be safer. And if I'm wrong, please direct me to that scientific study or that data or that experiment, and I will more than happily educate myself top to bottom on it. But I know it's not out there because it would prove itself ineffective. I would personally like a date that I can expect my child to come home and tell me they have removed the plexiglass. I'll wait for that date, but I won't wait quietly for long. Critical race theory and sex education. What is going on? We, the parents, want full disclosure on the curriculum there. What's written online is decently put together, but it is also still vague. We want to know every lesson taught, the subjects within these lessons, how this information is being presented, who is presenting it, and we want this breakdown for every grade level. And where it's there, again, it is not in depth enough. Parents demand options to choose to opt in or opt out of this subject. These subjects will not create better learners, better students, or enhance the aptitude or learning strategies of our children. The subject matter instead brings light to issues that our children may be too young for, or parents simply do not want their children to be a part of. A suggestion would be to have these subjects as options for high school students to take as elective courses or as a requirement to graduate and make it a senior class. This ensures children are not indoctrinated with information, nor are they sheltered from it. However, it gives them a chance to mature and experience regular education and life without the extra concerns we are filling them with. It is hard enough to be a kid today. These topics tend to enhance anxiety and create uncomfortable dynamics that otherwise did not exist. Teaching children to be kind to everyone is the absolute best option. We don't have to accept or like how everyone lives or looks, but being respectful, civil, and kind is non-negotiable, and that should be the bottom line. In summary, we're asking for your cooperation. I don't want to go against parents. I don't want to go against school boards. None of us do. I don't want to go against superintendents. I want to stand by everyone's side. We want to stand hand in hand, in line, hug, with or without a mask, your choice. We just want you to stand with us in the option. Everything should be an option. And we're asking you to work with us now before this vaccine mandate comes out, because we know that if Murphy wins, we're going to have a mandate to talk about. Thank you. Oh, I'm so sorry. I do, just because I know a lot of people will be like, oh, there's no science. There is. Here's a warning signs of the wrong eyeglass prescription, which I got from, his credentials are incredible. But okay, so I have for you at your leisure, I have this, Paulie Alexander. He's got all types of degrees, more letters behind his name than alphabet soup. I have a study from the Mayo Clinic about eye strain and what that actually causes. So you can correlate those two together and have a party. And then right here, stress and health, the psychological, behavioral, and biological detriments as put together by, where is this here? The Department of Psychology from the University of Miami. So this is a nice thick one, but that's about the stress and anxiety that our children are experiencing every single day, wearing masks, sitting in plexiglass, and being paranoid about germs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Edward Liu, 9 Seminole Drive. So I'm a chief of infectious disease at Jersey Shore Medical Center. So I wanted to have some input on this discussion about masks and plexiglass. So I am in favor of mandatory masking, and I think plexiglass should continue. Okay. So the children that we have, the younger children, they don't have the EUA current availability, right? So it's several weeks away. So that's an unvaccinated population. The older kids have the option, but I'm sure they're not as high as the adult vaccination rates right now. That means you have a highly vulnerable population to COVID. Now, of course, people will say that pediatric patients generally do very well with COVID, and there's some degree of truth for that, okay? However, the kids belong to families, and they can bring COVID back into families. I can say in the last 2 years, but I've been treating COVID patients, that happens over and over again. So the child may do fine, may have one afternoon of fever and feel better by the next day. But the grandparents that live with them may not do so well. So I think it's very important that we not only just focus on the child and whether they do okay with COVID, but actually the family consequences, because they are severe. Not only are their family consequences severe, but there's also problems with closures, and we've seen a lot of them. Last month, I've seen that almost 1,000 people were in quarantine in a neighboring county. Toms River's school system had almost 1,000 people in quarantine, with ultimately more than 400 people infected, including staff members. That's not something we want to see. Now, of course, it happened with already mandatory masking. So the question is, how well do you enforce it? How well do you encourage people to do it? Do you allow the exemptions that do exist currently in the governor's order, right? So it's very important to keep it up. I can tell you that my experience with COVID is that it's very unforgiving. If you have lapses, it will break through those vulnerabilities and cause infection. The other important thing is that holidays are coming. Now, most people view that with great happiness, and I guess pre-COVID, everyone did. I can tell you that after every major holiday, we see spikes in the hospital. It happens all the time. This is the biggest holiday season of this year, right? Every year we have it, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's. That's a lot of gathering of people. The numbers will go up. So this is really the wrong time to be talking about withdrawing protection for our children. I would say that that's the most important thing. I would say that yes, there's less data on plexiglass, but it does make sense. It stops droplets. Masking is important. Wearing masks correctly is very important as well. Okay. You know, if you don't wear it above your nose, it doesn't do much good. Okay. And we've seen that in the hospital. So this is a different population, but we have mandatory masking in the hospital, and yet we see staff getting sick. So we sort of wonder, well, why is that? Because in that tiny period of time they have for lunch, 20 minutes, something in between, they're not wearing their masks and they're not following the distance, safe distancing. So we've seen that. And that just tells us that with the current Delta virus, you're going to see it more, okay? And with the interactions and people visiting and all the positive things, there can be negative things as well, okay? After every major holiday, we've seen spikes in a hospital. Now, the good news is, New Jersey is relatively well vaccinated. We've seen how poorly some states have done without vaccines in 30 to 40% range. We're in the 66% as of today, okay, fully vaccinated. And some people are actually getting boosters, which I think for certain populations are very important, okay? I hope that people do consider it for their children. But if they don't, then all we have to do to protect them is masks. And yes, I do think plexiglass could play a role in it as well. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. I'm not gonna time you.
Okay. But I took up too much of your time last time.
No, but I don't time anyone. Other people do that. I appreciate that.
You guys have a much different level of dedication than we do. So I just want to acknowledge that because you're here every week for as long as it takes. The last time I think I was here, I left early and you guys all had to sit here for probably another 2 hours. So my name's Kai Collins, 127 South Telegraph Hill Road. I just want to acknowledge the parents that were here and spoke. I may not agree with them, but I do understand where they're coming from. I don't think Delta is not real, and I don't think COVID is not real. And I think, you know, the precautions that we take, masks and plexiglass, can be used as tools. I think we are abusing what we have been given as a tool. You just heard a doctor of infectious disease say if you don't wear it properly, it's very ineffective. And if you look through our schools, and I know my kids come home and they can't breathe in these masks and they wear them under their nose. So it's not really a tool when it's being worn like that. And what he's saying is it's, you know, you don't want to take it home to your grandparents, but they're vaccinated. So I don't understand where that logic still
tells us to shift the risk onto our children all day long in school, prolonged use of masks behind plexiglass where they are, there are problems that are arising. They did in my child, and she finally got her mask exemption because it got so severe. Her pediatrician was like, this is crazy. We've tried everything and nothing is working. So I just think we need to acknowledge that we can use these things as a tool. The parent that got up here in support of plexiglass mentioned maybe rearrange the chairs so they're around the perimeter. That's a fantastic idea. I'm open to all those suggestions, and I think we need to work together. But first, we do have to untie our hands, and it would be really awesome if all you guys are leaders of education in this town would speak to our town and our community and our school to say, let's work to untie our hands, because we still have our voices and we can work together if we don't have state mandates to figure out what works for us in these schools, where we can educate and keep our kids safe and use a democratic process to put out a survey and say, guys, who's in favor of the plexiglass, who thinks it's working, who doesn't, and then take the science into consideration as well. But we can problem solve and we can use these things as tools. And then I'm just going to bring it to your attention because it just happened today. And I want to put it on record. My daughter came home on Monday after having her mask exemption, and her science teacher moved her to the back of the room. Fine. No big deal. She was good with that because now she's not getting headaches, right? And her chin infection is going away. Today, her library teacher moved her so far to the back of the classroom, she couldn't see the book. And all the kids turned around and they were looking at her and saying, why is Cora back there? Why is she all the way in the back? And they were talking about after class. And so when she came out of school today, she was like holding back tears because it's embarrassing. And so that is a prejudice that we are experiencing in our schools, just because she doesn't have a mask on now, right? Like she wasn't wearing it properly this entire time. I had her in a mesh mask half the time because a kid can't breathe in a mask. I mean, she's has all sorts of problems with this mask, and I know I'm not alone. So I just want to let you know what's going on inside these schools. What the teachers are doing when a child doesn't have their mask on. And it's setting like the psychological weird precedence. You know, I think everyone looks at her like she's an outcast and they want to, you know, throw her in the back of the classroom. And I understand that from a fear perspective. But again, you know, if we have vaccines for teachers and adults who want them, who need them, if they're effective, if they prevent transmission, why are we shifting the risk onto our kids all day, every day for a prolonged amount of time? And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Terranova, 8 Crescent Road. In response to the parent that said that the statistics are overblown and that 2% of people dying is not a lot, to put that in context, there are 938 kids in Holmdel schools. If 2% of those children died, that would be 18.76, rounded up to 19 kids. That's a lot. That's not a small amount. So 2% is, 2% is not a small number. Viruses do not travel on their own. They're carried by water and air droplets. They don't walk. So when people wear masks, it stops it from coming out. And it's when somebody is in a lab and they have a petri dish, they you don't have to worry about taking did the bacteria from this one petri dish jump over to this other petri dish? That's not the way viruses and bacteria work. They have to be carried on something. If they don't have a thing to carry on, it's not going to work. So they're not going to fit through the masks as well. And masks have been proven effective. There are now thousands of studies proving that the masks are effective when they are worn correctly. Regarding mandates, there is already precedence for mandates in Holmdel. I also grew up in Holmdel. I'm graduated 2008. And then my husband and I moved back here when we had our son because this was an amazing place to live and the schools here are amazing. And we wanted him to grow up and have the same opportunities that I did. And Tdap, polio, MMR, varicella, hep B, meningitis, DTaP, those are all mandated vaccines for Holmdel students. It's not out of the ordinary that another vaccine might be mandated. There is existing precedence for that. There are some things that show the effectiveness of plexiglass. The University of Washington released something October 29th, 2020. I think it's also important, people saying that, your grandparents could be vaccinated. Vaccinated people can still get COVID. That's been shown. Vaccines aren't foolproof. They lessen the chance, but it is not 100%. And yes, it is very scary when you don't know somebody's exposure levels. You don't know, you know, the child that doesn't have a mask or has a mesh mask. You don't know if his parents work with people that have COVID or if he was exposed at home. And so you're going to tell your child, be safe. So don't go around people that aren't wearing their masks properly. We want to keep our children safe. I have family that is immunocompromised and has lung issues. And I have family members that have died even though they were vaccinated. I would like to prevent further loss in my family. I had a friend who had a 10-month-old son who was in the hospital for over a week with COVID at 10 months. So the thought that in our elementary school kids, they could be, you know, being higher exposure levels for taking down any barriers and not having the masks enforced, that's disconcerting. I think that it's troubling that people say that they're anti-mandate in general. To me, that's equivalent of saying that somebody is anti-law or anti-regulation. We have laws in place for a reason. We have boards like yourself in place for a reason. It helps everything run smoothly. And Holmdel has always been a very pro-science district. I remember growing up here that sciences were extremely important. And it is disturbing to me that it seems that the township is considering disregarding science and giving weight to those who are not supporting scientists and who are actively perpetuating an anti-science platform. We don't want our children to question that, science isn't real. Who says if the world is round or not? You know, what's to say? Everything's just an opinion. Science is science. We do research. There's studies. Studies can change and new evidence can come out, but you follow evidence. And I think that in Holmdel, it's very important that we continue following evidence, not just for our kids' safety, especially for our kids' safety, but also for education purposes to show that, you know, this is just the message that we want to send.
Hi, my name is Raven Nadimathu. I'm at 2 Paddington Lane. I'm an ophthalmologist. I'm not an ID specialist, but I do speak as a physician. I wasn't raised in Holmdel, but I was born and raised in New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl. The reason for the mandate is because it's a public health issue. That's why, as the previous speaker mentioned, we have mandates for measles, mumps, varicella. You have to show the proof of your vaccination before you come to school. Maybe that's for a different conversation. 2% is a large number. You're right. It's not the same for children. So maybe it's not 19 children who might die, but is one or two an okay death rate for us to accept in our children? I do agree that vaccines are not 100% effective, but they are quite effective at preventing severe disease. But they're, again, they're not 100% effective, which is why we need layers. Masking is one layer. Plexiglass is another layer. As an ophthalmologist, I'm very close to my patients when I examine their eyes, and we have plexiglass that we have specially fashioned to hang on our slit lamps to protect us from the large droplets that can come from patients and to protect our patients from us as well. One of the other members spoke about plexiglass causing headaches and blurred vision, eye strain. This is one topic I can speak knowledgeably on. Plexiglass does not have a prescription. It's clear plexiglass would not contribute to eye strain. Eye strain is a very vague term. There can be many, many different reasons, and I'm happy to educate regarding that. And there were a couple of articles she gave, including wearing the wrong prescription. And I agree, wearing the wrong prescription can contribute to eye strain, but plexiglass is not in that category. And I understand the extensive research that you feel that you have done, but your Google search doesn't constitute a medical degree. I'm a physician. However, I still take my kids to the pediatrician. I don't just Google things. I may Google things. Actually, let me scratch that. I do Google things, but that gives me just a baseline, and then I defer to the experts. When my husband had a wrist injury, I Googled what it could be because it's not my expertise. We made an appointment to see the orthopedic surgeon. In the same way, you have to be able to trust in what the experts have done. We can't all know everything about everything. If you needed cataract surgery, I would assume you wouldn't think you could Google or watch a YouTube video and then know how to do cataract surgery. I would hope you would come to an expert such as myself. And now we do shift the risk to the children because they are in the highest risk group of propagating the disease, although they don't propagate COVID, thankfully, as much as other diseases, but they are in quite close quarters. And under 12 are not vaccinated. And so that does absolutely affect the kids at village school. I will be first in line. I've already made a phone call to get my kids on the waiting list for when the vaccine is available. And I really do hope that when it becomes available and FDA approved, that we do have another conversation about this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Smita Kargutkar. I'm an endocrinologist. I'm not an infectious disease specialist, but I do support the plexiglass and the mask inside the school. And the reason being, even though I understand 2% or less what we're talking about death risk. And we all know generally children don't get severely infected, but if they have an immunocompromised condition, some kids have type 1 diabetes, which we see, or they have some lung diseases like asthma or some other congenital diseases. They are particularly at high risk of developing severe infection. And there have been case reports coming out. See, what we haven't seen much for the children yet in the scientific data, because children were protected. For last 1.5 years, majority of the places, the schools were closed. We were all virtual. September was the first time the schools restarted, and now the kids are going back to school. The older kids, which are 12 and above, are already vaccinated. So the chances of them getting infected is definitely less. But we are talking about young children, 5 to 12. Once we remove the plexiglass and the mask mandate, what's going to happen is we're going to see a sudden increase in the rate of transmission and the infection. The data takes time. We are not going to get data, a scientific published data, in 1 month. The data will take time. When we see thousands of children getting into school without plexiglass and without masks, and we see that surge of infection, then all over the world, we will start having data. This child died because of COVID. This child got pulmonary fibrosis because of COVID. This child went into diabetic ketoacidosis. The data takes time because once these infection rates will go up, more and more kids will get sick. And then we will see what happens. But that might take 1 year or 2 years before we will get all that data. By that time, the damage will be already done. We are very close to getting the vaccine for the children. When we talk about the vaccine mandate or efficiency of the mandates, I want to remind everybody the history of mankind. We all must have heard about polio and smallpox, right? Have you heard about it? Smallpox and polio, we don't even see it anymore. Why? It was eradicated many years ago because some smart people brought in the vaccine, majority or almost all of the population was vaccinated, and we don't even see any of those diseases. Diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, mumps, measles, rubella, I can give you many examples. All these diseases are almost to the point of eradication now. We see small outbreaks rarely because there are some people who won't give vaccines to their children and there will be a small outbreak somewhere. But in the majority of the world, I can say confidently 95% of the times these diseases have been eradicated because there have been good vaccines and they have helped. Yes, there is not much data about the vaccine because the way the pandemic hit us, unprepared, there was not enough time to do a 5-year study and then prove that the vaccine works and then put it on. Till that time, 700,000 more people would have died. Vaccines do work. There is enough data to tell that vaccines work. Every medicine has side effects. We all take Tylenol and ibuprofen. We all take so many over-the-counter medicines. They can have side effects. Tylenol can cause liver failure. How many people know that? Ibuprofen can cause kidney failure. How many people know that? We take them. We see advertisements. We take them if we have pain, if we have fever. But we don't worry that we're going to have liver failure or kidney failure. There will be side effects, but they are rare. They are in a very low cases. Yes, if you have a severe medical condition or you're immunocompromised and you have a real medical reason not to take a vaccine, if you have an anaphylactic reaction, if you have allergy to a content to the vaccine, that's a different issue. But just to say that making vaccines not mandatory doesn't make any sense. If we live in a democratic society, and if we live in a society, we have to respect people's opinion. But when it comes to making rules and regulations of a country or a society, we have to follow the benefits of majority of the people, not just personal opinions of some people. There are a lot of people who would do a lot of bad things in a society if you just let them do it. Just because it's their personal opinion doesn't mean that is the right thing to do. Okay, and we talked about the mortality. We keep talking about mortality, but we have to consider the long-term complications of infections in children. And there have been some case reports where there have been long-term cognitive disabilities have been reported. There is a lot of waste of school time. It took them 6 months to 1 year for them to come back to school and get regular education. Another thing too important to notice is if we remove the mask and the plexiglass and there is a sudden rise in infection, we have to quarantine everybody. We follow 14 days quarantine. Imagine we get somebody infected, we quarantine, then we get back to the school, then again we get somebody infected, we again quarantine. If this keeps happening, we will end up going back to full virtual. Then forget about the plexiglass and mask. Everybody's back to home and they have no social activity. So we are going backwards here. And I think it is a little premature to remove the plexiglass and vaccine, everything, because vaccine is almost there. We're going to get the vaccine in a few weeks. Hopefully, most of the parents will decide to give it to the children. I know there will be some parents who will not give it, and there will be fights and there will be protests against the vaccine mandate, and not 100% of the children are not going to get vaccinated. Both children will, and even vaccinated children can also. So both the children, vaccinated, unvaccinated, they will keep circulating the virus. So this pandemic is not going to end in 3 months or 6 months. We have to deal with it for another maybe year or two. We will be lucky if we can get done with this scenario within a year or two. So we are not looking for a 3-month scenario here. We have to make long-term strategy planning, and we have to take into consideration the safety and the long-term safety of the health of our children. Education is necessary. It is excellent. And we came to Homdel because Homdel is such an excellent school district, is one of the top 50 in the entire country. And we really appreciate all the hard work you all put in to make this an excellent school district. But we just think when something like this, a major decision is being taken, all the parents should be taken, their voice should be heard. And we cannot just base it on just few parents. If something has to be done, a survey has to go out to all the parents taking their opinions. We have to follow the government mandate and the law because we are all law-abiding citizens and we don't want to do anything illegal or we don't want to put anybody else. And one last thing I'm going to say, 2% is a small number, but when it's your child, it's 100%. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Vito Terranova, 8 Crescent Road, Homdel, New Jersey. So I'm loud, I'm an educator, so I kind of have that voice. First of all, I want to give you guys a round of applause. You are probably the hardest working school board during a pandemic that hasn't happened in 100 years. So can we get a round of applause for them? So I really appreciate everything you do. And I understand you have done a lot, bringing HVACs. You are putting plexiglass up. You're making mask mandates. You're doing everything you can in a pandemic that is hasn't been around for 100 years. So I appreciate all your work. Now I could bore you all this time with saying that I have 10 years of microbiology background. I'm not gonna tell you about anything about viruses. I'm not gonna tell you about anything about education either, even though I have a master's degree in education. What I wanna talk about is legality. Schools and school boards really have two purposes, really to educate our children and two to protect our children, right? That's our job. So when it comes to diseases, we have to understand two terms, transmissible negligence. These two terms put together in a legal defense already has precedence in the court. Earl versus Kuko, I believe is the exact case. Now that refers to tuberculosis, but it can expand to here. Four things are needed to prove negligence. One, does the person have a duty to protect? I would say that the school does, the school board does. You do have a duty to protect. Two, is there a breach or removal from this duty? Well, removing any part of it right now during a known pandemic, which admittedly you just said during the meeting that we are in the middle of a pandemic, seems to be a breach of that protocol. Three, have to prove that the contraction happened at the school, which, let's be real, with the way the state of New Jersey is right now, probably gonna happen. Four, there needs to be a form of damage. Now, form of damage could be loss of property, time from work, medical bills. All of these are very easy to prove when it comes to this COVID-19. Now, I'm not saying this to scare anybody. I'm saying this to protect certain people. And I'm not saying it to the school board directly. Because as I was informed that the school board doesn't really have say in what goes on from day-to-day practices, but it does affect the schools in at large, especially in Homedale. Like I said, you guys are a hardworking school. And I think every one of us came here, stayed here, moved here, so our children can be part of this amazing school district. And I'm asking you to do your in lieu parentum, protect our children as guardians when we're not here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I just want to make a comment. Sorry, Deb, I feel compelled because the legal part of it all, I just want to assure the board, spoke to our attorney, I have a little bit of background too. I don't think any of us could ever be accused of doing anything negligent here, and I would suggest that you've done everything and gone above and beyond, and that the fifth thing I'd ask you to look up is the Tort Claims Act. And I'll tell you,
I did look at that.
Okay.
I'm saying it's not anyone on the board. I wasn't addressing the schools at large.
Okay. Well, thank you. We're the board. We represent the school. If anyone's negligent, we get sued.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
no, okay.
There's also precedent in the state.
But we file a motion to dismiss. And a negligence claim. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Debbie Brown, 15 Cindy Lane. I guess we're giving our years, class of 84, class of 85, class of 85. I think I might beat everybody. Anyway, I have 2 points I want to make. First is about the plexiglass that, look, nobody's ever going to agree on everything. This is natural. However, I remember there was a few times the superintendent in my presence said that we're going to wait till the numbers get low. If the numbers get low enough, we believe there may not be a reason to have the plexiglass still. As of today, the numbers are 5. There are 5 positive cases amongst 3,000 students and about, I'm guessing, 500 staff custodial administrators. There's 5. To me, how much lower are we going to wait to go to remove the plexiglass? I also was at back to school night. They're foggy. There's hair sticking off them. There's food sticking off them. The custodians don't get paid near enough to have this extra duty of taking care of the plexiglass. It's ridiculous. I think if we use our new survey system, since we all really care about the children, if you surveyed all of the students and all of the staff, because I have spoken to many of them and my children have come home with stories about many of them that hate the plexiglass as much as the students. Staff and students may disagree on different things about the masks and everything else, but the plexiglass seems universal. They hate it. It doesn't work. It's ridiculous. I don't know how much lower the number has to go. To me, this is the time now. It's a good time to remove it. I don't know how science labs are working. How are they working together? Are they walking around in a bubble with their plexiglass? I mean, to do a science lab, it's kind of ridiculous. Okay, that's my plexiglass comment. The second one is about transparency and communication, and everybody has a lot to say. I'm a big communication person. I know I've been up here since 2012, barely missed a meeting, right, Mike? And communication is my thing. Yes, I don't think we do a great job all the time. I think we try to do a good job. I have seen a huge improvement since 2012, tremendous improvement with the videotaping of the meetings, the audio and things that get out. I think the phrase in the age of information, ignorance is a choice, serves well here because Elizabeth's committee reports, all of the, which are very extensive, and all of the committee reports are online. If people are looking for something, they can find it anywhere. Now, I'm not happy with everything that went on, some of the administration issues with Indian Hill I was vocal about, but I'm asking you, I'm not asking the 2,000 people on social media that apparently should be included in the superintendent search because they all have a better way of running the school. So I think it's kind of silly when you're reaching out to social media when sometimes you already know the answer. So those are the pot stirrers. But if you're asking, oh, if I come in third period in high school, am I going to get marked absent? Why are you asking the 600 people who actually aren't in the superintendent search this question? Ask it to the principal. So sometimes a communication problem starts from here, yourself. You need to reach out to the right people. I'm not speaking to you all, obviously, because
You gave me a good reminder, so I'll wait.
If I have a question like that, I reach out to Principal Kokoda if I want to know if my kid is going to be marked absent if they come in third period. I'm not going to name names, people on social media. So anyway, that is my point. In the age of information, ignorance is a choice, and please remove the damn plexiglass.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know that, and Debbie, remind me of something. I know some people on social media, when they are talking about school-related matters, might get frustrated that no one's responding here on behalf of the board. And again, sometimes our hands are really tied. Sometimes might even have the most updated information and I don't respond because it's really not my job. A lot of the times it's the superintendent's job. So, or the principal's job. It's not, you don't have to hear from me on those matters. It's up to these other people who have these roles of responsibility. So your comment on social media is a good one, because I do believe people go there for answers. And he, you know, even sometimes, I remember I used to tell Dr. McGarry and tell Dr. Seitz too, sometimes when he sends out messages to the full district, to always put down there like who they should contact if they have a question, even besides him, even like the principals and whatnot, because there's so many other modes of communication. Contacting us, it's great. You know, I respond sometimes and then send it off to the superintendent, but there's very few things that I can say publicly without it being in the course of this meeting, or when there's a public statement made. I do have the authority on behalf of the board and the district to be the spokesperson, but not everyone else here, and even me as the person designated by law and policy to be the spokesperson, I still don't, because sometimes I feel like it interrupts with the superintendent's role. So I'd ask everyone to think about that when maybe sometimes you feel frustrated, you're not getting that answer you need, you're looking for on social media. I would ask you to look to the source, which is probably the many administrators, teachers, they'll put you in the right direction. So thanks for that reminder. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Samir Asgaukar. I stay at 10 Seminole Drive in Homedale, New Jersey. And I'm in support of using the masks and plexiglass for the younger kids. And the argument that I want to counter is that, oh, the numbers have gone low, so now we can remove the protection, which I think is not logical, because the numbers are low because we are taking precautions. And it is like saying, oh, now we are, numbers are low, so let's throw caution to the wind and let the numbers increase. So that is not a sensible thing to do. And of course, in a few more days, there is a vaccine coming out. So why the rush now? We have been through this for so long. Can we not hold for a few more months and just let everyone get vaccinated, whoever wants to? And then we can take the call, okay. But now, why the rush? That is my question. And so I don't think it makes any sense just by going by numbers are low is a justification to remove plexiglass and masks. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Andrew Gunn, 5 Grandview Drive. I'll keep my comments short and to the point. For the record, I and many other Homedale parents fully support Executive Order 251, mandating the wearing of masks on school premises. To be blunt, it is reprehensible that you, President Flynn, have personally flouted this executive order time and time again, as well as allowed others to violate it here in attendance this evening. Further, I and many other Homedale parents strongly believe that the district should continue to make every effort possible, including maintaining plexiglass dividers in classrooms, to limit the spread of COVID-19. We are still in the midst of a pandemic, and children under the age of 12 have still not yet been provided the opportunity to be vaccinated. To reduce safety protocols at this point is reckless and not in keeping with the standard of excellence Homedale demands.
I'm Surekha Kolor, 43 Windswept Road, Homedale. I want to go back to the point of the search for the superintendent position. Last month, when I had asked Dr. Flynn, you said the search was on way, and it's good to see a lot of progress from last board meeting to now. And it's also good that you're trying to take input from parents in the form of surveys, which seem to work well. But the in-person input is where I think some of the parents were not allowed to give their input because it was already closed by the time they had reached out to the to HYA. So the in-person parental input, I wish there was more of a message sent out to everybody. I see that you answered this question to the other people already to some extent, that some parents were sort of picked based on certain criteria, or whoever reached out to you, but rather it could have been just more open, allowing people to know that this was the small window and they needed to reach out at that time so that more input could have been taken, in person being more valuable than just surveys. That's all I had to say.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'll just remind you what I said earlier and was reported to us by HYA confirmed. So is that the feedback that we received in the in-person settings corresponded with the feedback we also received from the many people in the survey. So everyone seems to be on the right page looking for the same type of desired characteristics. So that's good news. If I thought I saw some type of difference, we could have held another parent or resident type interaction. And therefore, that's why we didn't do another one. I just wanted to see what that first amount of feedback received, which was pretty all on point, all very consistent, and puts us in a really good spot going forward. So thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, anyone else? Anyone else? Two people? Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Lee Meyer.
Okay.
At 3 Sheffield Place. I want to express my deep concern that the level of transparency around the superintendent's search, in my opinion, has been woefully lacking. The fact that the parents have been handpicked by you and the board seems totally inappropriate. And it seems as though you are stacking the selection process with people who will support whatever decision it is that the board is moving towards. I also want to ask the board, why are you rushing to choose a superintendent when we are approaching an election for the board early in November? This board is a lame duck board, and there is a law which states that lame duck boards should not be making important decisions about the school district, but rather should be leaving these important decisions to the newly elected incoming board, which will be taking their seats, the new members at least, in January. This is a crucial decision for the community, maybe one of the most important decisions that Holmdel can make. My question to you is the board intending to make a final decision and a vote on the new candidate before the new board members are able to take their positions in early January? If in fact you are, I want to say again, I think that is wholly inappropriate, and I think it's unfair to the community. Are you planning to make a decision before the new board members are taking their seats? Thank you.
Thank you. The answer to that question is no. The decision will be, the resolution will be made and presented at for the next board. The process is underway, if you had heard earlier, to conduct the search, because it's been something that the board has directed me as president to conduct. My role as president is to fulfill the wishes and desires of my board. I think I've done that. Yes. Okay. And in doing so, we are trying to get ourselves positioned because, as Dr. Brown earlier advised, we are running up against a deadline with the interim superintendent due to restrictions on the length of time for which an interim superintendent can be in place. So I do believe we are proceeding in accordance with and good faith to make sure that this district is well attended and has a superintendent in place to meet certain deadlines that are forthcoming. Dr. Brown also noted the fact that whoever we select could potentially have to give to a 60 to 90 days notice to the district that they're in. So there are some significant time constraints in place. I wish I could have started it earlier, except that unfortunately, there were so many search firms that I did reach out to that did not have the capacity to do this work right now. We were left with 2 proposals. We intended to move on it at the last meeting, except that a few board members expressed that I would reach out to one or other search firm after our last board meeting based on information shared during our executive session. I did do that. I did find out from yet another executive search firm that they weren't available. So in accordance with the direction given to me by my board, we authorized the execution of a contract with HYA and we're off running. So thank you for your comment. I hope that clarifies some issues you might have. Who's next? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, this is Shannon Sadlowski from 5 Ashley Drive in Homedale. I'm not going to argue too strongly for either point. I just want to sort of ride a middle ground here and point out where I think sometimes sides aren't listening to each other. With regard to the vaccine, so many people point out the fact that you get vaccinated and you still get COVID. So my family got vaccinated, my husband and I still got COVID this past summer. But instead of having to deal with exacerbated symptoms, I basically had a cold for a week. So because I was vaccinated, my experience with COVID was what some people call regular COVID without a vaccine, which is a common cold. I'm grateful for the vaccine. Nobody ever told me, and I know it was never under an impression that I couldn't get COVID or that it was impossible for me to get COVID if I was vaccinated. I always understood that being vaccinated meant that it would lessen the degree and severity of my symptoms, and it would probably lessen the ability for me to transmit it to other people, which was the case for us. I think that's important to note. I think it's also important to realize that with regard to masks and with regard to plexiglass, I'm not saying that, and I don't think any doctor and I don't think any scientist is saying that they are a fail-safe, that they are 100% sure way to prevent COVID. For anyone who is a very excitable football fan, we know that our defensive line is not made up of one thing that will 100% prevent a touchdown. You have your cornerback, you have your linebacker, you have your safety. You line up every precaution that you can to prevent the other team from getting in the end zone. And that is what I think Homedale has done a great job of being able to protect our children in the last year with regard to the plexiglass and the masks. I don't see a point in removing them now when we are so close to a point where those who want to choose to vaccinate their children can, and then can feel like the rates of them being able to transmit the vaccine will lessen. And if they do have the possibility of getting sick, that's lessened. We're so close to that point. And if people choose not to vaccinate their children at that point, and there is a mandate, let them fight that fight at that point. I don't know why it would be something that we would debate now when we're so close. But I will say that, you know, in my opinion, everything should not be an option for parents. Public health and public school are, you know, it's a society. And as many other people have pointed out, it is, you know, something that should be decided in the good of the public health. What I will say about children, because I have a 4 and a 6-year-old who have a vast array of personalities on any given day. If I come into back to school night and the plexiglass that my kid is sitting in front of is gross, it's probably because my kid was gross that day. So I'm going to send them in with some hand wipes, some glass wipes, and I'm going to tell them to keep their plexiglass clean. Because quite frankly, as long as it's clean, there's not going to be any eye strain. I sat there on back to school night. I saw what it looked like. And if the plexiglass, in my opinion, was nasty, I would have addressed it by sending my kid with something to clean it. If your kid can't breathe in a mask, I think you should get a note from a pediatrician. If your kid has a skin condition that, you know, mask exacerbates that, they should get a note from their pediatrician. I absolutely agree with the woman who said, school should not be deciding wholeheartedly what goes on for your child from a health perspective. It should be in concert with your pediatrician. So if your pediatrician feels that it's not in the best interest of your child to wear a mask, 100%, that is something you should pursue with the school on an individual basis. And if in a classroom they are being segregated in a way that is unacceptable or inappropriate, which is exactly what sounds like happened today to Ms. Collins' daughter, that should be the focus of the board. Work with the local and the county and the state Department of Health and say, for a child who gets an exemption from their pediatrician, what are our protocols? What are we going to do to protect that child so that they're not isolated, they're not ostracized, because that's wholly inappropriate. You know, and I think we can all see where everyone else is coming from. Masks, plexiglass, they don't prevent COVID, but they help us with a layer of protection. You cannot deny the fact that when kids pull down their mask when they're eating lunch, the plexiglass prevents those little particles that all of our kids, because it's very hard for them to keep it in their mouth, it spreads. It happens during lunch. So it's another layer of protection. When they wear the mask, when they sneeze, it's not getting all over everyone else. We understand the fact that air particles travel through masks. Again, we all just need to see where the other side is coming from. You know, just my last thing that I will say is this. One life is too many, and 700,000 is way too much. I am not going to put my children's lives at risk. I love my parents. I love everybody in this town. I think it's a wonderful community. I wish we could all see where everyone else is coming from and work together. I will also say that I am Homedale new blood, and I think that our voices are a good contributing factor to the health and safety of our children. And I hope that everyone can work together to find common ground, because, you know, at the end of the day, we all just care about our kids and their education. And that should be the focus here. The education, keeping our kids in school, talking to the teachers about what makes them happy, because happy teachers make happy students. My kid comes home every day happy from their first grade class. And we are very grateful for that. So I just hope everyone can keep communicating. That's all I have.
Thank you. Steve, anyone else? Nope. Okay. All right. At this point in the time in the meeting, we go to executive session if required, which is not. So I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Sorry, the superintendent. Sorry, Lee, go ahead. Sorry.
There are, excuse me, a number of things said this evening I think I do have to respond to. First and foremost, I do appreciate everyone who came out this evening, those who jumped on the Zoom so you could hear what's going on. I do have to say that there was a tremendous amount of inaccurate information presented tonight. And that to me is a concern, because with inaccurate information, rumors, it doesn't add to the discussion, and it doesn't bring us to a consensus as to what is, what we should be doing, what we should not be doing. Something as simple as following the CDC guidelines, someone suggested that we're not. We are following the CDC guidelines. I will follow up on the cleaning of the shields. They are sanitized every night, but if they're not being cleaned to the degree that we expect, we will take care of that. That is not a difficult thing to do. When I arrived back in the summer of 2020, the pandemic was just beginning to take off. And you will recall that we put together a plan to open. We presented it to you August 12th, and we implemented it September 14th. It was the hybrid. Half the students came in one day, half came in the other day, and it was a shortened day. There was no lunch. I think that was on a Thursday or Friday that we opened with our teachers. That following Tuesday, 2 days after we started school, I sat down with our principals and said, what do we have to do to go full time? What do we have to do to provide our students with lunches? That was 1 or 2 days after we started the school year. Now, I tell you that because when people say the desk shields are coming down, they are. I don't know when. They'll come down when it's safe for our students. They'll come down when it's safe for our staff, because both groups are exposed and are at great risk. Having had COVID without a vaccine, I know how bad it is and how it affects older folks like me and some of our more experienced teachers. And I don't want our students, I have two grandchildren, two little girls, I don't want them to go through COVID. They're in Virginia, so they're not here. But the point is, my responsibility is to listen to everyone. But at the end of the day, and this has been mentioned repeatedly tonight, I have a responsibility to ensure that your children and our staff members are in the safest possible environment. And that's what I'm doing. I don't know when the shields will come down. I don't know when the masks will come down. We're monitoring it. We're looking at it. We're trying to find when it will be in the best interest of our students and our staff and the families of our students to get rid of those things, because it's not ideal. But in this area of pandemic, it's the reality. We need to wear the mask. It's a state mandate. It's an executive order. Are the shields perfect? Of course not. Are they better than nothing? Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's what we're doing. And again, I'm in a position where half of you will be happy tonight and half of you will not be. But fortunately, it's not a popularity contest. It's not a popularity contest. It's my responsibility. I willingly accepted it. I'm putting 50 years of experience on the line, multiple degrees, experiences in multiple school districts of all types, to say that in this district, on this night, we need the mask. In this district, on this night, we need the shields. On this district, on this night, apparently we need better cleaning of our desk shields. And anything else we can do to make this safer. Because at the end of the day, that's my responsibility. The board provides input. They are very intelligent, involved individuals. They hear from you. They represent you. And they provide me a lot of feedback and input. And I listen. Tonight, you provided me with a great deal of input. And I listened. And after listening to all that, looking at where we are to ensure the safety of your students, we need the shields and we need the masks. There's some other things that were said. Someone called my office and said, we're having a meeting on Thursday night. Now, I was not aware of any meeting on Thursday night, and I said, no, I'm not having a meeting on Thursday night. But someone I thought we were having one, they just made it up. And they were informed that if you have a concern about the school district, you come here and speak at a board meeting, and that's what you did, and that's great, because that's a very important voice that we need to hear. I heard tonight that there's no CPAC meeting, and to be honest with you, there hasn't been one since before the pandemic. But there is a meeting on November 8th with some key people who will plan a CPAC meeting. Now, for those of you who don't know what CPAC is, it's very important. It supports our special education students, and part of that support has to be parent involvement. So, yes, we will have an organizational meeting on, I think it's the 8th. We hope to have a full CPAC meeting before Thanksgiving, and then we'll continue that as required throughout the school year. So when we hear things and we need to correct things, we do. Oh, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. We do not teach critical race theory. I can say that a number of times, I already have, and I'll say it once again. We do not teach critical race theory. The things with sexuality are mandated by the state, and we will follow those mandates. And certainly our curriculums are online and people are free to take a look at them. I am very concerned about a parent who spoke this evening about a child being singled out and possibly discriminated against because of a mask or no mask. That to me is brutal. And that will be addressed tomorrow morning. Someone said that the desk shields were not being used, and I checked with our principals, and they are. Now, with 3,000 desk shields, at least, maybe more than that, is everyone in perfect position in every class? Probably not. Did somebody get lax since we opened school almost 2 months ago? Possibly. But the principals will address that tomorrow, and we'll make sure that going forward, the desk shields are in place. The desk shields are clean. And if we need new ones, we have them. So we will take care of these, what I consider minor issues with the desk shields. We have had, in a district pre-K through 12, we've had one or two cases where we had to speak to a child about a mask, that's all. Nothing widespread, and we're dealing with it. So at the end of the day, it is important that we have accurate information, that you share your concerns with the people who represent you, and that you come to board meetings and tell us what's going well, and tell us what we need to improve upon, because we will listen. But as I said, you know, I know in this position, and it's been this way for over 25 years, it's rare that a superintendent can please everybody. And there are times when a superintendent, he or she, can't please anybody. A colleague of mine, and you may or may not agree with this, but it's a good example. One of the superintendent's high schools had an Indian mascot, and he took it upon himself to remove it, thought it was inappropriate. Can you imagine the outrage of that community getting rid of their mascot that had been there for probably 50 years? But he did what he thought was right. And in hindsight, he's probably a little ahead of his time. And the community has embraced the change. They honor the mascot from before, but they've moved on. So being a superintendent is in many ways a great job. But there are nights where we know we're not going to please everybody. But all I can reassure you is that every decision I make will be in the best interest of your children and the people who work with your children, teachers, staff, support staff, lunch aides, and so forth. And we do it in a collaborative manner. I frequently call key administrators together. I frequently speak to people in the community as needed to make sure that we have all the information we need to make a sound decision. Will everybody agree with all those decisions? No. But I can tell you, and I'll be able to stand up here and face you and say without any reservations, we made the decision in the best interest of your children, and we will continue to do that. So I do appreciate you being here tonight. I thought you made some good points, but at this point, and we're at a good point, don't get me wrong. The cases are down, but more importantly, the transmission rate is down to below 1.00, which means the number of COVID cases in the state are getting smaller and smaller. When they're one or above, they're expanding. So COVID is contracting, we're in a good space, and I would love to be sitting here in November and say, guess what, we're getting rid of the shields. Guess what, we're getting rid of the masks, and I'll celebrate with you. But for right now, I say stay the course. We got healthy kids, healthy staff members, they're in school, they're enjoying it, and let's keep it going. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Seitz. Okay. I'll take a motion. Take a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
Second.
Show of hands. Good night, everyone.